Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Today on Route 51, we have local reaction to the national debate about health care coverage for contraception and religious rights. It's a topic that has filled the airwaves over the past 2 weeks and dominated the Republican presidential race, with some pundits decrying what they call a war on religion and others what they call a war on women. The Obama administration is mandating that all health insurance policies cover FDA-approved contraception, as well as prenatal testing under the National Health Reform Bill, known as the Affordable Care Act. That policy was modified after opposition from leaders of the Catholic Church so that the cost of the contraceptions is picked up not by the religious institutions, but by the insurance companies. Opponents say it's not enough. Against this backdrop, there are controversial new policies concerning abortion in Virginia and here in Wisconsin in new legislation before the state Senate. We have two great guests with us today to discuss these topics. Here in the studio, Lon Newman, the Executive Director of Family Planning Health Services, and joining us by telephone, Jelaine Appling, the President of Wisconsin Family Action. Lon and Jelaine, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Glenn. It's good to be with you.
And if you'd like to weigh in on this discussion, if you're a listener, here's the phone number, 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. Let's start by having the two of you tell us about your organizations. Jelaine, why don't you go first? They do have one thing in common. They have the word family in them.
Good point. Wisconsin Family Action is an advocacy organization. We work on issues related to marriage, family, life, and liberty here in Wisconsin. And we believe that at the core of our society, as the foundation of our society, is family. And by that, we mean married men and women and the children that they have and the way that they bring up those children. We think that's the foundation of society. So that's pretty much who we are. We believe that we take that message to policymakers, churches, and citizens.
You took a position on the one man, one woman marriage amendment that was passed in Wisconsin a number of years ago. What position, Jelaine, does your organization take on abortion and on this latest concern over funding of contraception?
Well, we're pro-life. We believe that life begins at the moment of conception. Implantation is not required for there to be a life. And we believe that life finishes at natural death. So we are truly pro-life. Where we come down on this latest issue, Glenn, is that we believe that fundamentally this is a religious liberty issue, that the government does not have the right, based on the Constitution of the United States and our Constitution, to tell religious organizations what they will have to cover by means of an insurance policy. And this accommodation that the president made is absolutely just a sham. Insurance companies don't work for free. They aren't in the business of doing charity and giving away things. The organizations that have the policies will bear the price of the policy in increased premiums. There's just no way around it.
And Lon Newman, tell us about Family Planning Health Services.
Well, Family Planning Health Services, Glenn, is about 38 years old, going back to Nixon and the and H.W. Bush sort of adapting and adopting a national family planning program. So it's old. I've been there a little more than half of the organization's existence now. We serve about 9 locations now with family planning clinics. We provide routine reproductive health care to men and women, and we also have the WIC program in 3 counties.
Do you perform abortions?
We don't perform abortions, and we don't make medical referrals for abortions. Our mission is maternal and child health. I would say we prevent abortions. We don't provide them.
And you also distribute contraception at your facility?
We distribute contraception at all of our facilities, yes.
And how have you come down on this issue regarding, I imagine you're pro-choice in terms of the abortion issue, in terms of this latest issue about mandatory insurance coverage of contraception?
The organization is pro-choice, and we've always been pro-choice, because when you provide medical services to women and reproductive health care, you see quickly that, you know, no method is perfect in the real world, and some women have a medical need for abortions, and so we want that to be safe and legal, so we take a pro-choice political position. On the contraceptive coverage issue, the president asked the National Institute of Medicine to review what should be included in the national prevention package. The National Institute of Medicine came out with recommendations based on what's best medical care, what's in the interest of public health, and the president followed those directives precisely.
Before we get further into the conversation, I want to play a tape for you. I've got a few tapes that we'll be playing throughout the program. This is Archbishop and Cardinal-designate Timothy Dolan on CBS This Morning expressing his concerns about the insurance mandate.
That even those who would disagree with us on the specific issue of contraception and abortive fashions would agree with us on the protection of religious liberty. I got a wonderful letter the other day from an Episcopalian pastor, and she says to me, I disagree wholeheartedly with the church's stand on this issue, but count on me being with you in the front lines in saying that government has no right to tell you what you should do or to make you obey something that's contrary to your conscience. We can't compromise in principle. What seems to be clear now is that this was a terribly misguided judgment. So let's not compromise on that. That's almost rewarding bad behavior. What we're very reluctant to do, and what I think wise voices are saying, is we can't have a government bureaucracy invading the privacy and the independence and autonomy and the integrity that our Constitution gives to religion.
And that's Cardinal Timothy Dolan. He was cardinal-designate at the time that was recorded. Lon Newman, it seems pretty clear, religious employers, this is a quote from Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council. He's the president of that organization. He says the revised HHS mandate does nothing to change the fundamentally anti-religious, anti-conscience, and anti-life contraceptive mandate. It only creates paperwork gimmicks. Religious employers will now have to drop health insurance to maintain their conscience and face severe penalties for doing so. Doesn't this violate the constitutional prohibition against tampering with religion?
Well, I think the most important thing is that we have rights in conflict, which always makes this complicated. So, for example, the religious institutions themselves in the ruling have been exempted. It's the religiously affiliated institutions, for example, hospitals and schools and things that serve a broader public, which in fact are bound by the regulations. And further, the individual employee of those organizations also has a constitutional right to freedom of religious practice and belief, as well as a right to privacy, especially in regard to reproductive matters. So the conflict in rights here is, here's an employee of an organization that serves the broader public who either her rights are protected, and this from mostly women, of course, we're talking about, either her rights protected for her religious beliefs, for her health care, or the institution, the employer, is permitted to intrude upon both her privacy and her access to health care. There isn't any pure solution here, but the fact is the president has been correct in protecting the constitutional rights of individuals. Otherwise, there is no religious liberty.
Julaine Appling, let's follow up on what Lon just said. Why should any religious institution get to treat its employees like second-class citizens in terms of what their insurance coverage is?
Well, that's quite a statement to call them second-class citizens. And first of all,
that was Lon's implication.
Right. Well, the first thing I would say is we have no rights in conflict here. What we have is a gross abrogation of the religious liberties of all the people in this country when you have a president taking this kind of action. There is no right to contraception. There is no right, quite honestly, to health care. That is something that our government has tried to impose on all of us as, and now, a product we all may have to buy. And now, through this policy that they're putting in place, trying to impose contraception available to people for, quote, free, which we know isn't true because there's no such thing as a free lunch and no such thing as free contraception. This is not a conflict of rights. This is the government saying, basically, that they are going to impose this. What we're talking about here and what's at stake, ultimately, is whether or not our civil society is going to survive. Are we going to have this heavy boot of dictators, like a dictator coming in and saying, this is what you will do, organizations, whether they're parachurch or whatever, and that is not what we are designed to be as a republic. That's not how our government has historically functioned. There's no conflict of rights. It's about whether or not we respect religious liberty, not freedom of worship. Notice that Lon talked about how the churches were exempt from this, and that's because somehow this president and this administration has thought, okay, it's fine for everybody to practice religion within the confines of their home or their church, but let's not take it to the public. Well, when you get into these other organizations and schools and things like that, you are into a more public arena, and I think that's the reason for this policy.
Let's give Lon Newman a chance to respond. Lon Newman, this mandatory health insurance reform law strikes at the very basis of our society.
Well, the law is passed, and it is the law, and the question is what is the preventive package that people will be entitled to under the law? And the preventive package is defined by, of course, the Institute of Medicine's findings. Now, nobody's required to use contraception. Nobody's required to deliver contraception or provide those services. So there isn't a violation of the individual right of conscious or religious practice, and it would be a violation of that right if employers were enabled, based on their own religious beliefs, to deny people the right to health care access based on their institutional religious beliefs. The Constitution, I think, must protect the individual first and foremost, or it doesn't mean anything.
Let's go to the phones. We have Oliver in Weston. Oliver, you're on Route 51 with Julaine Appling and Lon Newman. Hello, Oliver.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to ask Mr. Newman a question, if I may, Glenn. Mr. Newman, you're talking about access protection here. Am I understanding correctly that you believe that if the president's mandate is not implemented, that the individual's access rights are being violated? Am I understanding you correctly, sir?
No, I don't know. You lost me.
Okay. You're saying that if we do not have the insurance companies charging other parties or their stockholders and giving care for free, if we don't have that the individual women's rights of access to contraceptives are being violated, correct?
I'm not saying there's anything that's free, you've got a whole bunch of stuff in there, Oliver, that I'm not saying at all. You should say what you want to say, Oliver, and I'll listen. Say what you think.
Don't try to put words in my mouth.
You go ahead. You make your opinion, and I'll stick up for myself. I'll be all right.
Okay. My point is here that what we're talking about is not preventing individual women from having the right to access contraception if they want to pay for it. But the question is, who is going to pay, whether it's the insurance company stockholders, because the insurance companies have to provide this service at no charge, or me if I were being insured by this company. But you're making it sound like if there isn't payment by the insurance companies, provision for this, that the individual women's rights are being violated. And I don't see that. It's a question here of whether organizations have to offer something that they don't agree with at no charge to them.
Oliver, we got the point. Thanks so much, Lon Newman, your response, and then Julaine Appling.
Well, again, I support the law has passed, and there will be a preventive care package for women's health, and the contraceptive is included based on good public health reasons. I'm not making any argument that it's free or that nobody should have to pay for it. And I think it's true that, there's an indirect calculation. I would say the bishops got precisely what they asked for. And what they asked for was that they would not have to offer contraceptives to their employees and that they would not have to pay for them. Now, it's true, it could be argued they're paying for them indirectly, but there's a whole lot of things where we pay for things indirectly what we might not approve of.
Jelaine Appling?
Well, essentially what I disagree that the bishops got what they asked for. What they really wanted was for government to keep its nose out of their organizations, their schools and churches, hospitals, business. And the accommodation that the president gave was just a kind of a slick maneuver to take it from direct to indirect. And as a result of that, those organizations are still going to be bearing the cost of contraception that is in direct violation of their closely held and sincerely held religious beliefs. And that is an abrogation of those beliefs.
I would suggest that the bishops got, again, exactly what they asked for, but as you said, Jelaine, they didn't get what they really wanted. And what they really wanted was to deny access to contraception for millions and millions of women across the country. So when the president accommodated their specific requests, that was not enough. I would also suggest it's never going to be enough.
You know, this is a personal decision on a woman's part. It's not part of health care. Very little about contraception is about health care. It's about a woman's choice about how she's going to approach family planning. That's something that the woman should make that decision for herself, and it is not something that everybody else should have to pay for.
Well, simply not correct in the sense that approximately one-third of women who use contraception for whatever purpose use it for other purposes than birth control, for example, ovarian cyst prevention or menstrual regulation or other issues like that. I'd give this example. Under the Bishop's Healthcare Directives, women right now in Wisconsin, who are insured by their Catholic churches as well as by their Catholic employers, because this is the law now, under the bishop's directives are permitted to have oral contraception for those medical purposes. Now, how can an employer, without being unduly intrusive, determine what's the real intent of the patient?
Jelaine Appling, you've got about 30 seconds for your response, and then I've got to take a break.
Well, I would say, first of all, that We're in an area where, again, it's an individual choice. And there may be people for whom, and certainly there are people that take these kinds of contraceptive drugs, devices, whatever, for medical reasons. But the vast majority of women use them for, quote, family planning. And what you have is the government, number one, I would submit that what you have is a government trying to say, we don't want you pregnant. That's essentially what the government is saying by forcing these insurance companies. And we're treating pregnancy like it's a disease and a baby as if it's a disease and a problem and a sickness.
Ridiculous.
And that is a horrible philosophy for the government.
It's ridiculous. That's a ridiculous claim.
That's Lon Newman, Executive Director of Family Planning Health Services, and Jelaine Appling, the President of Wisconsin Family Action. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Back after this short break.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, working to build the local economy and strengthen the community by making local business everybody's business. Learn more about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We are talking about the mandated insurance coverage of contraception and the religious questions that provokes with Lon Newman of Family Planning Health Services and Jelaine Appling of Wisconsin Family Action. Let's go back to the phones. We have Ned in Wausau. Ned, you're on Route 51.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. As background, I have a PhD from UW-Madison. I teach human physiology, and I'm a Fulbright scholar. As far as this issue is concerned, I've studied it for decades. Wisconsin has a great contraception program already in place, and it's the same general program of 28 out of 50 states. In the Affordable Care Act, the requirement for cost of family planning or contraception by insurance agencies is the rule, not the exception. This issue is a coverage issue. And President Obama's decision to require insurance companies to provide family planning is a cost-effective one. We've been talking about requiring insurance companies to pay for contraceptive coverage, so let's take a look at what that costs. The Medicaid program providing contraception per year is about $300. In Wisconsin, 90% is paid by the federal government, 10% by Wisconsin. So that's only $30 a year for each Wisconsin couple to provide contraception. Now, as far as the insurance companies, it's approximately $2 per month per enrollee for each person's contraceptive coverage to add the additional benefit. But in Wisconsin, there is no additional benefit because it's the current existing law. So before we get all bent out of shape on whose side we're going to take, let's look at what the existing law is before we throw it out and nail President Obama to the wall with all kinds of accusations that he is doing something terribly abnormal here in restricting the rights. I'd like to talk about the rights of the woman and her rights to choose contraception.
All right, Ned, we got it. We've got to give our guests a chance to respond. Jelaine Appling, you go first.
Well, I confess that I had a really difficult time hearing Ned, Glenn, but it sounded as if he was saying there was existing law that he thought should be considered before people took positions on what the president had done. Is that pretty accurate?
Well, that, and he was saying that the cost to cover contraception is not that significant.
I did hear part of that. So what I would say to that is that this isn't about the cost of contraception. It is truly about whether or not the federal government or any unit of government has the right to step in and impose on religious organizations a mandate that in some way or other they must set aside their religious beliefs regardless of the cost and yield to what the government is mandating. In this case, it happens to be contraception. What will it be down the road? Who knows? That's what this is about. It's not about the cost that would be borne by the organization or added into the premium for the organization. It's about the principle.
We're going to have to take a quick break. Jelaine, you've got the last word for this segment. We will be back with more with Jelaine Appling of Wisconsin Family Action and Lon Newman of Family Planning Health Services and you at 1-800-780-9742. Back after this news.
Support for WPR comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, partnering with agricultural and commercial industries to invest in central Wisconsin's renewable energy future. More about the benefits of solar for business at northwindre.com.
We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio with Lon Newman, the Executive Director of Family Planning Health Services, and joining us by phone, Jelaine Appling, the President of Wisconsin Family Action. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We do encourage you to call in with your questions or comments at 1-800-780-9742. We are talking about the presidential mandate, actually the mandate in the National Health Insurance Program, the Affordable Care Act, to cover contraception. In the first segment, we played a clip by Cardinal Timothy Dolan. So we're going to play a clip right now, recorded in the last couple of days by Nancy Pelosi, who weighed in on this issue.
Well, first of all, the idea that they would be talking about contraception in this way is a real breakthrough for those of us, for I've been in Congress now, this has been my 25th year. Yeah. And for 25 years I've been saying to people, this isn't about abortion. They like to say it is, but it's about contraception. And contraception is something that is universally practiced. The size and timing of families is a family's important decision to make together with their doctor, with their God. It's not about some five men sitting around the table in Washington, D.C. But what is interesting about this is at last the country knows that all this talk about reproductive freedom really extends to something as personal as family planning and birth control and depriving women of access to contraception.
Jelaine Appling, I'd like you to respond to this first. Nancy Pelosi saying that the furor over contraception proves what she's been saying for the past 25 years, that banning abortion has never been the real concern of pro-life organizations, that all along the real intention of these groups is to ban contraception and access to birth control. Your reaction to that statement?
Well, I think the 25 years that Nancy Pelosi has been in Congress has really jaded her thinking. This isn't about that when you talk about contraception versus abortion, it is somewhat a package deal, I suppose, but the people who hold a pro-life position are, and thinking about abortion, see it as, when you talk about abortion, ending the life of a human being, that is different from contraception that, without being abortifacient, prevents a life from being conceived. I said at the top that we're an organization that believes that life begins at the moment of conception. And so we would consider something to be an abortion if it prevented the implantation of a fertilized egg in the uterine wall. But when we talk about abortion, we mean abortion, the ending of a human life. And so, yes, contraception that prevents the implantation of a fertilized egg, we would consider abortifacient. All contraception doesn't do that, obviously. So there's a real distinction there. She has gone down a path that is an attempt to take sidetrack people in their thinking. First of all, I find it interesting, reproductive freedom. Well, I do have reproductive freedom. That's true. My freedom, however, has consequences as a result of the choices I make. And society at large, as far as paying the cost of that, bears enormous cost for those choices. And we shouldn't have to be forcing organizations that have religious beliefs against those choices from putting the bill for them. And that's fundamentally what's at stake here.
Lon Newman, Jelaine Appling says life begins at the moment of conception. A fertilized egg, well, some states treat it as a person according to amendments to their constitution. If a fertilized egg was treated as a person, if life indeed begins at conception, what kinds of birth control would be outlawed?
Well, I mean, there's several, I guess, that would come to mind. I for example, IUDs would have a primary mechanism of, preventing, not the primary mechanism, because it would still prevent ovulation. There's some mixture of means there. But I think one of the biggest misinformation pieces, which I think Ms. Appling kind of alluded to, in which the Republican presidential candidates have been hitting pretty hard, is the idea that Plan B, emergency contraception, is somehow an abortifacient on the basis of its preventing implantation. So it should be really clear about this. There is no medical or scientific evidence that Plan B one step, the emergency contraception pill, prevents implantation. It simply does not exist. And so I'd like to dispose of that, if I may, and say that there's no medical evidence to support that claim, and therefore it'd be good if that would be dropped. The second thing I'd say in the broader issue, which I'm sure that Ms. Appling and I would disagree about, which is fine, and her position is more a religious one than I think, you know, I'm trying to take as a provider of reproductive health care, and that is that I don't understand medically or scientifically how somebody can have an abortion before they have a pregnancy. And so in this context, you can have, apparently under Ms. Appling's construct, you could have an abortion without having a pregnancy.
Jelaine Appling?
Well, abortion is about killing human life, about destroying human life. And we know that scientifically, at the moment of conception, at the moment of fertilization, all the components of being a human and all DNA and everything are there and present. There will never be anything added to that. All that fertilized egg needs is time and the proper environment to go into further development. It isn't changing its humanness, it's changing its developmental stage. And so when you stop the implantation of that fertilized egg from going into where it needs to be to get the nutrition and the right environment and have the time that it needs to grow and develop, you have taken a human life at its earliest form, at its most vulnerable time.
But
so he's splitting hairs on pregnancy versus
fertilization. It's a very important and critical point. What I would say is, unless every petri dish fertilized egg in every fertility clinic across the country is a human life that's going to that you are out protesting and trying to bring to full term, I would say that those are not pregnancies, and therefore, similarly, a fertilized egg is not a pregnancy in the sense of being able to be aborted. What's missing from Ms. Appling's description, and I think it's fitting, is there's no woman required in this pregnancy. There's no woman required if you don't have a pregnancy. This fertilized egg is sort of, but as soon as you have a pregnancy, you have a woman involved.
Julaine, I was at a news conference a few years ago in Wausau where there were two ministers, a Unitarian minister, a Christian minister, a Presbyterian, and a rabbi, who all took the position that a fertilized egg does not constitute human life according to their religious traditions. Now, does that imply that you're trying to impose your personal religious beliefs on society at large?
No. What has happened through the years, Glenn and Mr. Newman, is that the language has changed to try to accommodate what Mr. Newman is promoting and pushing, and that we can somehow dehumanize what a fertilized egg is. If we can call it a fetus, if we can call it an embryo, if we can call it whatever, then it's not a human. Scientifically speaking, at the moment of conception, everything is there for that human being to become a full adult human being at some point in that developmental stage. The folks who try to redefine that keep pushing it out to say that no life begins at implantation. No life begins. There are people out there who believe that life begins after the baby is fully born and has can experience some kind of emotion. You can read these people. Look it on the internet. You'll see it. And so what happens is
redefine
the debate. And I'm trying to take the debate back to the beginning where life begins at the moment of conception.
There are religious people who claim that it's not human life until birth.
Religious people can be wrong.
Well, I'm not a religious scholar, and I'm not trying to have a religious debate about this. I think that it's a religious issue of when life begins, and it's a progression that I'm not trying to answer. What I'm trying to answer is a very simple question. How can someone have an abortion before there is a pregnancy? I think most people, that doesn't make any sense.
Right,
therefore, these products are not abortifacients because there's no pregnancy.
I don't want to stay in the weeds here with this any longer because we're down to our last 15 minutes of the program. And I want to play a clip from Rick Santorum, the Republican presidential candidate that's been getting quite a bit of attention, in which he has come out not only in opposition to the insurance coverage, the free insurance coverage of contraceptions, but also to some forms of prenatal testing.
One of the things that you don't know about Obamacare and one of the mandates is they require free prenatal testing in every insurance policy in America. Why? Because it saves money in health care. Why? Because free prenatal testing ends up in more abortions and therefore less care that has to be done because we cull the ranks of the disabled in our society.
Now, he's talking primarily about amniocentesis. Jelaine Appling, would you like to expand on that?
Well, I think Rick Santorum got this right. Amniocentesis, and when it's used and people get a diagnosis that there is a birth defect of some sort, about 90% of the time the women elect to have an abortion. And so the testing then gets used, in a sense, to promote that. And we know that sometimes doctors encourage patients, often doctors encourage patients to go down that road. And so as a result, there is kind of a genocide going on here against the disabled. And I would submit at some point when we start looking at some of this that, the genocide might even extend to a determination of whether or not we're going to choose a sex and do away with one if we don't, you know, like the sex that we've ended up with. It's happened in other countries. I'm not saying it's here yet, but we know it's in other countries.
Lon
so
Newman?
I think Santorum got this exactly right.
I think the former senator's comments are cruel and disrespectful to women and to their physicians, and it's absolutely absurd. Women need this medical care to have the healthiest pregnancies. I don't think any woman terminates a pregnancy lightly, and I think this is a good example of, you know, we talk about government interference and intrusion upon the private lives of women. If this is the way we're going, think about the religious liberty and the privacy rights of those women who are imposed upon by this kind of ideology. It's cruel. I think it's cruel to women and to women's health.
Would we not agree that there is a difference between having a test available through the medical field and requiring all insurance companies to provide the coverage at taxpayer expense? This isn't stopping women from going out and electing to have an amniocentesis testing. It's saying that what the Obamacare or what PPAC is trying to do is require that everybody contributes towards women choosing to have that test. If women want it and they think they need it, then they should bear the price of that. Nobody's trying to deny them the opportunity to have the test.
Lon Newman, a quick response?
Well, the Affordable Care Act has passed, and the question is what's going to be included in the preventive care package? And I would be happy to debate whether it should be repealed or whether it's done properly. The question is what's in the preventive care package, and this is preventive health care for women.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with much
more. Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio talking about reproductive rights, religious rights, and the conflict between the two as manifested in the national debate over mandatory insurance coverage of contraception. There are a number of things breaking out across the country in regard to social issues. In Virginia, Governor Bob McDonnell has backed down from a pledge to sign a bill that would have required what are being called transvaginal ultrasounds as a precondition for an abortion. This is a procedure that a woman would have been forced to undergo, adding a significant additional cost to the abortion. We've got a clip from Virginia State Delegate David Englin, who called the provision state-mandated rape.
I'm pleased that Governor McDonnell and Virginia Republicans caved in on forced vaginal penetration. But come on, I mean, the fact that it took them so long to come around on that issue that they knew very well up front was the problem with the bill is just ridiculous. But then what they did, Governor McDonnell took a small group of men, Republican legislators, behind closed doors in the dark of night and decided to play doctor and decided to come up with a new bill. Well, make no mistake, the new bill still bullies women into not having abortions. That's their whole purpose. It includes provisions like requiring women who could be victims of rape or suffering from miscarriages to have images, ultrasound images, placed in their medical file. If that's not emotional blackmail to prevent abortion, I don't know what is.
Lon Newman, I'd like you to comment on this controversy in Virginia and if there are any implications for Wisconsin.
Well, it's not just emotional blackmail, as the gentleman said. It's actually physical abuse, and it does meet the legal definition of rape. And again, I think there's a pattern here of absolute disrespect and disregard for women's rights, for their privacy in terms of making these very difficult medical decisions. And it really is cruel for people under a banner of, you know, pro-life or some positive family label to put women through this kind of abuse. And the pattern is quite consistent.
Julaine Appling, do you think the governor made the right move by backing down from this, or are there procedures that women should go through in order to let them know whether or not that embryo that they're carrying is viable?
I don't think it's about viability. It's about whether or not women have the opportunity to realize that it's not a blob of tissue, it's not the product of conception, it's not just a fetus as truly a baby. And here in Wisconsin, our women's right to know law requires that the abortion provider let the woman know that an ultrasound is available to her and that, you know, she has that option. Now, that's a real soft requirement, if you will, in our women's right to know. How these ultrasound laws are being written and passed and implemented in other states, every state has been a little different. I don't see this at all, as the gentleman from Virginia said, as meeting the, and as Mr. Newman corroborated, meeting the statutory rape requirement. This is an opportunity for the women to realize that this is a baby, that it isn't just a blob of tissue.
It's not volitional. So, it's not volitional on their part. It's a mandatory penetration. It's not volitional on their part. It meets the definition of rape. We're not making that up as though it's hypothetical. That's the definition of rape in Virginia, and that's what occurs. And it's an involuntary penetration of a woman physically.
Well, it's interesting that you folks want to talk about things that are medical terms, and medical terms when you want to use medical terms, and then you want to switch over to these, to the legal and statutory rape terms when it's convenient. What I would argue is that when you talk about choice and the freedom that I have to choose in this issue, in the sense of the breadth of this issue, the choice stops when I have a fertilized egg. The choice that I have most of the time, because most pregnancies don't happen as a result of rape or incest, most happen by a conscious choice by the woman to engage in sexual activity that results in the baby. That's the choice. And so when you get down the road and you're trying to protect human life, because it's not the baby's fault here, that's a victim.
Julaine,
I don't see that as a statutory rape.
Julaine, there's a bill before the Wisconsin State Senate now, authored by Republican Senator Mary Lazick, I believe that's how you pronounce her last name, requiring a physician who performs or induces abortions to determine whether the woman requesting those services has given her consent to do so voluntarily. Your reaction to that legislation?
Well, we support it. We supported it and lobbied for it, advocated for it. Because we know that there are times when women in those situations get into coerced into an abortion by people who have a vested interest in it for one reason or another. And so there's no perfect way to assure that, but we believe this bill does go and close some of the loopholes to make it a little bit more likely that the woman is making the choice to have the abortion as a result of her free will, not as a result of being coerced.
Well, again, that's twisted in the sense of, is it preferable they be coerced by, you know, I would say political bullies into or legislative bullies? You talked about an inconsistency in my argument, which was too vague for me to relate to what you were talking about. But the individual rights of these people are being abridged by these laws. And you can't stand for religious freedom and at the same time extrude their or remove their values.
I want to look at how this is playing politically in just the last couple of minutes we've got here. Former Wyoming Senator Alan Simpson, who's a Republican, says the Republican Party is committing suicide by focusing on contraception and social issues. Here's a quote from him. He says, "Here's a party that believes in government out of your life, the precious right of privacy, and the right to be left alone. How can they then be the hypocrisy of fiddling around with these social issues? We won't have a prayer in November," he says. So I'm wondering, was President Obama Machiavellian? Did he deliberately pick a fight with conservative religious groups because he knew that it would publicize the fact of free birth control in the new health law and that he could turn the debate into one of women's rights and contraception instead of a war on religion, and that that would help him get reelected? Jelaine Appling, what do you think?
Well, first of all, it's unfortunate that somebody who claims to be a Republican who supposedly supports the platform has taken that position. First of all, I want to take this back to what I said at the beginning. This particular issue happens to be, contraception happens to be the example. The underlying root is that it is about religious liberty and the encroachment of government into the and taking away of religious rights. Now
we're down to our last minute, so Jelaine, give me 30 seconds, then I'll give Lawton 30.
And so it is appropriate that we all get concerned about this. One group's religious liberties are threatened. Everybody's religious liberties are threatened. So I don't see it as a contraception issue at all. And it's unfortunate that it's being made that way, because it's much bigger than that and more important in the big picture that we have going into these elections.
One person's religious liberties are threatened, and all of our religious liberties are threatened. And I think you listened to enough and heard that. As for the policy position, President Obama has been very conciliatory to the other side.
Lon Newman of Family Planning Health Services and Jelaine Appling of Wisconsin Family Action. I want to thank both of you so much for being here. I thought this was a pretty civil discussion given the kind of heat that this topic typically generates. And I want to thank both of you for keeping it that way. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producers, Jane Ritger and Crystal Bennis. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Route 51 can be heard every Thursday at 5 p.m. on the Ideas Network stations in north-central Wisconsin. You can also follow our adventures on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Glenn Moberg, forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Thanks again for riding along with us. And until next week, we're heading out of town.